Hello and welcome to the Racing with Rob and Roller podcast, New Year's special. Happy 2024, everybody. Every year we have done a new show to ring in the new year and to go over some of the news that's dropped since our last show of 2023. We'll also have some fun tonight with the Rob and Roller Awards and a lot of other super fun segments that we can't wait to show you. So actually, this is going to be a really, really quick intro. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with us, this might be your first time listening to us, despite the fact that it is our New Year's special. I'm Rob Peters. I'm located in Indianapolis, Indiana, near the racing capital of the world. Actually, several miles south of that, but not too far. Still within, almost within Marion County city limits. And he is Josh Roller. He's located in Charlotte, the other racing capital of this country.
America is home for racing, Rob.
Yes, America's home from racing. That's what I should have said. That's what they go by. So we're from there. We're coming at you live, pre-recorded, whatever. Live for us, pre-recorded for you. That's what I used to say several years ago. By the way, this technically counts as our sixth season. So we're coming up now. Coming up in February, we're going to have our sixth season of Rob and Roller. We're going to celebrate that in a lot of ways. But first, we're going to go ahead and jump right on in to carry some of the news that has dropped since the last time we met. We'll start off with Formula One here. Logan Sargeant is going to get a second stint at Williams, meaning the 2024 F1 field will remain the exact same as 2023, how it ended. For the first time in F1 history, apparently that's never happened. So very interesting note there. Other pieces of Formula One news, Miami and China will now host sprint race weekends alongside Austria, Austin, Brazil, and Qatar. And the new Sauber name is now Stake F1 Team Kick Sauber. Make sense of that? Hold on, I'm going to say it one more time. Stake F1 Team Kick Sauber. That sounds like a bunch of words strung together in no coherent structure, but that is really what they're called. Stake F1 Team Kick Sauber.
I know we said no commentary, but that sounds like a fictional team on F1 2013.
It just sounds like a fictional team in general. Like it sounds like a fictional team from, I don't know, what I'm looking at some of my Saturn games over there. What do I got? Virtual Racing could be F1 Challenge. That's a great game, but that actually has licensed F1 cars in that one. Maybe Super Monaco GP, maybe that. I don't know. Some of those are licensed. I can't remember. But yeah, definitely very bizarre, and that reminder that the Alfa Romeo partnership with Sauber ended after last year. So that's the new piece. And yes, we did decide no commentary, Josh and I. We didn't specify that before. You know, we didn't tell everybody else, but yes, we did talk about that before the show. We're not going to do commentary on some of the news. We're just going to have some fun because it's a new year, new show. Enjoy. We're just going to have some fun. But we are going to move on to some IndyCar news here. Honda has informed IndyCar that if costs associated with the engine program do not go down, they could pull out of IndyCar competition. Now, it's interesting I said that because that is a very controversial thing, but we will talk about it, I'm sure, when we come back in our first new episode of the new year, or excuse me, of the new season coming up here in February. And then related to that, Ilmor has been appointed as the service provider for IndyCar's new electronic recovery system units, ERS units. And then, in addition to that, IndyCar has confirmed the postponement of the ERS system until after the Indy 500. Now, that doesn't necessarily surprise me, given the fact that initial comments from drivers after the open test with the ERS units at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, they said they were not necessarily as fast, and maybe perhaps the cars were weighted down a little bit more, so perhaps that's maybe a good thing, especially when it comes to the Indy 500 and hoping that speeds can stay around where they have been the past couple of years. Moving on, Stingray Rob is now an AJ Foyt driver as he will replace Ben Pent. Well, I don't know. I think he's replacing Santino Ferrucci. We have no real confirmation or announcement about Ben Pedersen's future, but he seems to indicate that Stingray is now a teammate of him, but again, he's not been confirmed, so some very bizarre things going on there. We're not really sure what that's all about. But I'm sure we'll find out by the time we get here, get to the new season in February. And then finally for IndyCar, Dreyer and Reinbold is planning two Indianapolis 500 entries for 2024. So very good news there. Still wish that they could run a partial schedule at IndyCar sometime again. But, you know, it is what it is. Moving on now into NASCAR, after, you know, going into a quite the long hibernation or hiatus, I guess, from telling anybody anything what's going on, the Money Team racing team is, the Floyd Mayweather team, is planning on making cup starts in 2024. That's what they say, so we'll see if they show up at Daytona. And then furthermore, AJ Allmendinger has officially announced that he's moving back to the Xfinity Series to drive the number 16 Chevrolet for Colleague Racing. However, he will attempt the Daytona 500 for Colleague in their number 16 Cup car, which is, I assume, still expected to be a rotation of drivers for 2024. And then, hey, Shane Van Gisbergen is driving full-time in the NASCAR Xfinity Series in 2024 in the number 97 Colleague Chevrolet. And that's a partnership with Trackhouse, by the way. He will also drive in the ARCA Menards Series race at Daytona, so he's going to have to, in NASCAR, I guess, they're going to make him get super speedway experience, despite the fact that he already has a cup win. I mean, it makes sense. He's never been on a super speedway before. He's never really been on an oval, to my knowledge. Now, he has driven at Bathurst, and he has won at Bathurst, which is probably about as close to get racing at Daytona as you could get without actually racing at Daytona.
Have you forgotten he raced at IRP?
Yes, but that's not a super speedway. That's a short track.
You said he hadn't raced on an oval. I was just watching your words.
Okay, he hasn't raced on a super speedway. I should have said that. I apologize. He has not raced on a track 1 mile or larger.
There you go.
And nothing, obviously, no track, like I said, comes close to Daytona. Bathurst only because of the large elevation changes, and I'm only equating that to Daytona's changes in banking, you know, steepness. But that still might even be a stretch to some. Moving on. Beard Motorsports has announced that they're going to run both races at Daytona and then both races at Talladega with Anthony Alfredo. Interesting note there, though, it doesn't seem like they're interested in entering the Atlanta races like they previously had been. So, interesting note there. Noah Gregson was announced as the driver of the number 10 car for Stewart Haas Racing next year in 2024. So, Noah Gregson is back. Very mixed reviews, very interesting on how sponsorship will go. That's my biggest thing, is I'm curious to see how sponsorship will go, so we'll see how that turns out here in February, see if he's got more lined up. And then Joe Gibbs Racing released its Xfinity Series lineup with Sheldon Creed driving the number 18. And then, hey, the return of the number 81. I'm excited to see that because Chandler Smith is going to pilot that car full-time. And then Eric Almirola and John Hunter Nemechek are going to rotate driving the number 20. While Joe Graff Jr., Ryan Truex, William Sawalich, and Taylor Gray are going to rotate driving the number 19 car. The Daytona 500 and the inaugural cup race at Iowa have sold out grandstand seating, so very good news there for attendance. Blaine Perkins is going to drive for RSS Racing in 2024, so good news there for Blaine. And then, hey, Lane Riggs is the new driver for Front Row Motorsports in the Truck Series, replacing Zane Smith, who, as we all know, is going cup racing next year. Or this year now. And then Grant Enfinger has found a new ride after the closure of GMS Racing's Truck Series operations. He's going to join CR7 Motorsports. And then finally, for NASCAR news, Daniel Dye and Tyler Ankrum have joined McAnally Hilgeman Racing full-time, with Jack Wood joining the team part-time. So that's the new alignment of some of the Truck Series teams, now without Kyle Busch Motorsports. So, Josh, that is that for the news segment of the show. Let's talk about, as a whole, we're going to go to our featured paint scheme now. This is typically what we do every show, but we're going to have a little bit of a caveat. It's going to be our favorite 2023 IndyCar livery of all the season, the entire season. Take a look at all of the IndyCar liveries that ran out of all of the different cars from Indy 500 to all the different races. You know, what's your favorite? So, Josh, why don't you go ahead and take it over and share with us your favorite IndyCar paint scheme or livery of 2023.
Yeah, I really I went through a lot of schemes, a lot of pages on crap. What's the website? Open Wheel.
Yeah, Open Wheel.
Yeah, it's as close as IndyCar will ever get to J Ski.
It is basically the J Ski of IndyCar, though. I mean, that's basically what I've used it for.
Yeah. And you know, one that stuck out the most was Santino Ferrucci's Patriot flag scheme for the Indianapolis 500. And you know, I don't know. I feel like sometimes you throw like a patriotic scheme in the past on IndyCar and it just doesn't hit. But this one really hit well, and I thought they did a good job. Whoever designed the car, whether it was in house or out of house for AJ Foyt, they did a great job with it. I think it very was popping. I try not to pick a scheme that has kind of ran in a few seasons in IndyCar as well. So, and this one was very, very unique, and I like that we're seeing. I feel like in the last couple of years we're seeing more one-off patriotic schemes in the Indy 500, and I thoroughly enjoy that. So I in this one again just popped out, stuck out well. I thought it did very well from a patriotic American flag paint scheme that, again, I don't know if they always land very well when you put them on an open wheel car. So good job by the designer there. That one was my favorite. Rob, I am not surprised of the one you picked, however, and you shake your head like, no, this was obvious.
No, it was obvious. There was one that I had in mind originally, but I realized, you know, that's not exactly exclusive to 2023, so I tried to pick something more that was exclusive to 2023. And that was Ed Carpenter's black and gold bit Nile livery from the Indianapolis 500, and really in general, not just the Indy 500, but basically the other oval races that he ran. And I really just like this. I mean, I like black and gold anything. I mean, it's kind of why when I was a kid, I was drawn to Purdue football a lot because of their black and gold uniforms and everything, and the black and gold. I've always been kind of attracted to that paint scheme. Even though it's funny, I didn't go to Purdue, Josh. I did not.
I have a Purdue. I mean, I don't really watch any college athletics, but if I'm cheering for a team, it's Purdue. And I
yeah, in the same way.
Universities were Indiana, so
yeah. Yeah, I don't care much for IU sports at all either, Josh. I prefer Purdue sports. I prefer Purdue football, I should say. Yeah. I do prefer that. But despite that, I love this paint scheme. I thought it was one of the better ones. And even though I still think Bit Nile is a scam or a money laundering something, I have no idea what it is. I just know it's not a legitimate business. I don't know what it is, but it certainly can't be a legitimate business.
And no, I'm sure, not sponsoring this show anytime soon.
Well, I'll be surprised if it's still around next year. So, I mean, if they've got enough money to sue me for slander, then more power to them, man. So anyway, that's my featured paint scheme. Not only did it probably cost me some money, but it also probably cost a lot of people their respect for me. Who knows? Let's move on to the Robin Roller Awards and see if I could do that a little bit more. This is going to be a little fun thing that we have done every year. Josh and I have given out awards to drivers that they will never see in person. These are entirely, you know, ceremonial awards, but still awards nonetheless that we, you know, are allowed to elaborate on a little bit. And so we'll just start off. We've got a couple of different categories here. So we'll start off with the first category, and that is the Rookie of the Year. Josh, who is the winner of the Robin Roller Award for you, in the Rookie of the Year category?
I gotta give it to Oscar Piastri. You know, very impressive to me. I know he's a great driver. You know, I know he's a great driver from what you've shared on here. I don't watch lower, you know, categories of Formula Racing. I should. I'm sure I should. But I just don't. And a lot of my knowledge comes from you. But you know, hey, you know, also the same thing goes. The stopwatch doesn't lie. Results typically don't lie. Good driver. And he walked into a team that, I mean, goodness gracious, McLaren was like on another planet at the beginning of this year, and Oscar kept his composure. I felt very well. Technically visited victory lane in a sprint race this year. So good on him. And again, that's technically more victory lane, top podium steps than Lando Norris has. And I'm not knocking Lando, but Oscar did a great job. I think if McLaren is able to keep those two guys together and continue the development path that they had this year, that's going to be a very formative duo. And Oscar Piastri, great job. Cannot wait to see what he can do in his sophomore season of Formula One.
Well, Josh, I got to say that I'm going to give mine to a guy that didn't win Rookie of the Year, didn't really have a top 10 finish, didn't really have top, five finish either. But still, nonetheless, impressed me enough to warrant this award, and that award goes to Agustin Canapino, and here's why. Fact of the matter is, Agustin Canapino held his own. He was not ridiculously slow. He was not overwhelmingly slow by any means. He was relatively quick, even at the Indianapolis 500. Now, while he didn't have a good finish there. In fact, I think he wrecked. He still had a good run in qualifying, which I thought was really impressive. And now, the reason why this is so impressive is because Agustin Canapino, compared to all these other drivers on the grid, had almost zero open wheel experience until joining IndyCar full time. He came straight from IndyCar from our Argentinian sports car racing, or Argentinian touring car, excuse me, the TC2000. And to just plop himself in to not even a good team, really, just kind of like an average mid to back marking team, honestly, for him to have not been off the pace, I mean, he did better than Jimmy Johnson did. And Johnson has 7 NASCAR championships, and Johnson struggled. Not saying Canapino didn't struggle, but he had a much better pace. He had, and his pace was getting quicker and quicker and quicker as the season progressed. That was the other thing. So, no, he didn't win Rookie of the Year, but that's because Marcus Armstrong objectively is a better driver, because Marcus Armstrong has more experience driving open-wheeled cars. He came from an F2 background, F3, driving in the lower formula, trying to get to Formula One. Now he's in IndyCar, of course he's going to be good. Canapino, completely different path to IndyCar. And that, to me, is what was so impressive, was that he held his own and was able to basically meet and sometimes even exceed expectations, I think. So very good job for him. I'm excited to see what the future holds for him in IndyCar. I hope that, maybe next year he can grab a top 10, and hopefully get to a point where, IndyCar racing in Argentina won't be a complete waste of time, because you'd like to see the Argentinian fans be able to see their guy do well and not run at the back of the field.
Yeah.
So hopefully that, if Canapino can run, top 10, top 15 consistently, maybe even better than that, maybe get in the top 8 a little bit, I think that would be pretty cool. So I thought he had a good end of the season. Like I said, it wasn't knockout ballpark. It's not like he killed it completely. It's not like he did that. But he personally exceeded my expectations for where I had him at the beginning of the season. And that alone, I think, is warranted for Rookie of the Year. Because, let's be honest, Marcus Armstrong, he's already been Rookie of the Year. He got Rookie of the Year in IndyCar. Everybody's going to remember that, but I think this is where Agustin Canapino deserves to be recognized as well. So let's move on now, not just Rookie of the Year, we're talking Breakout Driver of the Year, a driver who had just an outstanding season, a totally new season, a season that people didn't necessarily expect him to have, or her, whoever, this is a driver that not only exceeded expectations, but quite honestly shattered the ceiling of where anybody put them. So, Josh, who is your breakout driver of the year for 2023?
Yeah, man, I think Kyle Kirkwood was kind of the first driver that came to mind, and I looked at a couple others, and I stuck with my initial gut reaction. And, I mean, look, when you look at the teams that won an IndyCar this year, Penske, Ganassi, Ray Hall, and Andretti. Well, he was the only Andretti driver that visited Victory Lane, and he did it twice. I did not have him doing that this year because I didn't believe in Andretti. For him to do that, I think he made a statement like, look, Andretti, take me seriously. The field, take me seriously. Don't put everything on Colton Herta. Give me a shot. Give me a chance, coach. And I look for Kyle Kirkwood to back that up in 2024 and maybe visit Victory Lane once or twice again this upcoming season. And I don't expect it to stop.
Well, you know, Josh, I got to say, I agree with you on that one. I think that's a good person to give it to. But I think IndyCar had a couple of different breakout drivers, so I'm going to give mine to Christian Lundgaard. And then the big reason why was because this guy had more pace than his teammates for basically two-thirds of the season. And maybe even more than that. Arguably even more than that. Maybe even four-fifths of the season. If we really wanted to go down, break it down even further. Fact of the matter was, he was consistently quick. He won a race. He won a race at Toronto, which he won, quite honestly, in outstanding style. And he completely shattered my expectations. I mean, completely shattered them, especially given where Ray Hall was at the beginning of the season. You know, given how slow they were, how off the pace they were, it never really seemed like Lundgaard was struggling as much as Graham and Jack were. You know, Christian was seemingly able to defy all logic and quite literally just be quicker, be better, you know. And that impressed me. That impressed me a lot. I think I had always known because I had watched him, you know, in F2, and I knew that he was a very, very talented driver and that, you know, he was destined to do good things in IndyCar. But, man, I did not expect it to happen the way it happened. You know, I did not expect him to just get into a struggling Ray Hall team and then suddenly just be miles ahead of everybody else for one reason or another. I don't know if it was he had the better engineers. I don't know if it was he had, you know, the better setups, whatever it was. He just killed it. I mean, or if it was just the raw speed and the raw pace that he had just from being a good driver. Absolutely breakout driver of the year for me. Christian Lundgaard, my man. I can't wait to see what he does next year. Because I think Ray Hall, Lerman Lanigan is going to be quicker. They're going to be a lot better than they were this season. I think they're going to turn it around. I know we're not to the prediction points yet, but that's one of my initial predictions is that I think that's going to turn around, and I think we're going to see even more things out of Christian Lundgaard as the season progresses. So let's move on now to the next category of the Robin Roller Awards. This is the Most Improved Team Award, given to the team that improved the most from 2022 to 2023. So Josh, why don't you go ahead and start us off by giving us your Most Improved Team of the 2023 racing season.
I mean, Big Machine Racing. I think this one came down to Aston Martin and F1 and Big Machine Racing for me, and I chose Big Machine Racing because Scott Borchetta is clearly funding this team. He's been funding since day one, putting his product on the car since day one when he arrived at Daytona 2 years ago, 3 years ago now. But he hasn't had... He hired Jay Buford basically because I think they were friends, and that's not always the best.
He basically was his driver coach, I think.
Yeah.
I believe that's what was the story. He was
Jay
Buford was Scott Borchetta's driver coach, and that's why Scott Borchetta, you know, he races in Trans Am and everything.
Yeah.
So he credits a lot of where he is today to Jay Buford.
Yeah, that's it. But he took a swing in 2023 and hired Parker Kligerman. That to me is already an improved mentality. You want to win, get a guy who's done good in stock car racing. Parker Kligerman, a couple of different breaks here and there. I mean, I think he's I don't know if he's a champion in Cup. I think he's a several time over winner in Cup. But here in they hired Parker Kligerman, and I just pulled it up because I had to remind myself they have 12 top fives in their career. 8 of them are from Parker Kligerman. They have 27 top 10s. 18 of them are from Parker Kligerman last year. Parker Kligerman finished 18 times in the top 10 in 33 races. Made the playoffs. Yeah, they had some help because Riley Herbst and faltered a little bit, and Sheldon Creed miraculously found speed in the last couple races. But Parker Kligerman pointed his way into the playoffs. They made the playoffs for the first time. That to me is a most improved team right there. And I think a couple things go differently. Parker had speed a few times as well. And it really came down to he just could not beat the Toyotas. He couldn't beat John Hunter Nemechek or Austin Hill, who has running very similar equipment to him. So, yeah, I could see him winning in 2024. I don't think they'll be most improved team next year, because I think they're already pretty close to the top, or can be at close to the top and be winning races. So, yeah, most improved team, Big Machine Racing, to me, no question about it.
You know what, Josh? I've got to say something. My most improved team is going to go. I don't have any qualms with your choice. I think it's a perfectly good choice.
Yours is a good choice too.
I'm going to give mine to Williams. I thought that Williams personally was one of the most improved teams overall, based upon how they've been the past couple of seasons, where they've just been quite literally at the bottom, scraping the bottom of the barrel, either ninth or tenth in the constructor standings. This year they finished seventh, and they did it with Alex Albon and a complete rookie in Logan Sargeant. And now you could say, oh, well, Logan Sargeant, okay, got gifted that 10th place. Yeah, okay, he did. He did get gifted. I'm not going to argue that the 1 points finish that he had it was definitely gifted to him, and I have no reason to disagree with that. But look at where Alex Albon did. He started. I have the stats pulled up right in front of me so that I get everything right. He started the season with points in Bahrain. He scored a point. He finished 10th in Bahrain. Now, yes, he didn't finish in the points for the next couple of races, but he finished 7th at Canada, and then outside of the points, 11th in Austria, 8th at Great Britain, out of the points again in Hungary and Belgium, 8th at Zandvoort, and then 7th at Monza, you know, and 9th at Austin, 9th in Mexico, you know, and then 11th, 12th, 14th to finish the season. Not bad by any means, given the fact that I don't think anybody saw Williams scoring that many points. They scored 28 points, 27 of those coming from Alex Albon. That's significant, because if you look at where they've been the last season.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
The last season. Let's take a look at where they were last year. In the Constructors' Championship. I mean, they were all the way. They were dead last. They were, in fact, dead last. They scored 8 points. So they scored 20 more points this season than they did last season. I'm of the opinion that Williams has turned it around, and I'm glad to see them for that reason. Wow. Continuing to invest in Logan Sargeant, because I think that was the other thing. I did not expect to see Logan Sargeant at any given time. Don't get me wrong. I'm the biggest Logan Sargeant fanboy you'll ever find. But I knew what the expectations were. The expectations were quite literally, number one, I did not see him finishing in the points no matter what, be it on merit or be it because of disqualifications, whatever. I didn't even think he would be that close enough. I didn't even think he'd be close enough to the points even with disqualifications. He was. And with thanks to disqualifications, he got points. Caveat to that, too, as well, is I never, never expected him to make it into Q3 at all this season. Albon made it into Q3 a handful of times, and then Sargeant did it in Las Vegas, which was insane. I never saw that coming. I could never have told you. I would have never seen that coming in a million years, Josh. I tell you that. Never in a million years would I have seen that coming. And that's exactly what happened. So, honestly, in general, Williams, most improved team, got to give it to them. They killed it this year. Really, like I said, going from 10th to 7th. I mean, think about all that money. Think about all the extra money they're going to get now. Just for finishing that much higher in the Constructors' Championship, that's going to help them reinvest into that team. And I think a lot of that is why they're able to keep Logan Sargeant around. That's our most improved team of the year, Josh. Let's move on here to kind of a more subjective thing, a moment. It's more of a moment for this award. This is the Heartbreak of the Year award. What event in motorsports in 2023 broke your heart, just absolutely ripped it to shreds. Josh, what gets your award for this one?
This one was the first one that came to mind, easiest to pick. I mean, Marcus Ericsson in the Indianapolis 500 finish. I will stand by this. I think he got that one robbed from him. I didn't like the way the Indianapolis 500 finished. Marcus Ericsson should be a two-time and back-to-back Indy 500 winner. And, I won't play through what happened all through all that. Go back, watch it on YouTube. It's all over YouTube. You can find several videos. His finish, or the finish there where he gets passed by Joachim Newgarden, it's very heartbreaking to me.
I am hard-pressed to disagree with you. I think we're going to look back on the 2023 Indy 500 in a lot of ways, and it's going to always have it. We're going to celebrate it like we do any Indy 500 that's not, 79? No. One of the Indy 500s we don't celebrate. 73. It's 73. 1973, we don't celebrate that one. But all the other ones we celebrate. So 79 we celebrate. I don't know where I got that from. That was stupid of me to even think that. But anyway, my heartbreak of the year also comes from the Indy 500, and that's going to be Graham Rahal being bumped. Honestly, that whole bump, this is the thing. I mean, people can argue all the time. Oh, it's only one person getting bumped. Oh, it's only one person getting bumped. I don't care. It's still dramatic. Yeah. I don't care. Look, it really doesn't matter to me. I mean, yeah, remember back when James Hinchcliffe got bumped from the Indy 500? Like, it's the same deal. Like, it's dramatic. I don't care if it was just, one. When Fernando Alonso got bumped, I mean, I don't care if it was only him versus three other drivers. Like, I don't care. I don't care, guys. I don't care. It's a dramatic, heartbreaking moment that happens, and that it's one of the few moments in motorsports now that we still have that. Like, we're lucky that the Daytona 500 still has, cars being bumped. Even if it's just one or two, that's heartbreaking. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I'm not a big Chandler Smith fan, but I felt bad for him not being in the Daytona 500. You know, I genuinely felt bad for the guy. I felt like it was, and I knew because he got screwed with the no practice. But even then, I still felt bad for him. It was a heartbreaking thing, and this is the same with Graham. You know, it was a very heartbreaking thing, and it was serendipitous too because it was 30 years to the date because Bobby failed to qualify in 93, and now Graham failed to qualify in 23. And even though he ended up starting the race anyway under unfortunate circumstances, it still, to me, was a heartbreaking thing to watch because it was hard to watch this team that at one point was really challenging for Indy 500 wins and had won an Indy 500 in the past with Buddy Rice. To see them struggle that much was, I felt like, from a journalist's perspective, it was a great storyline. But from a fan's perspective, it was very heartbreaking. You know, it was just straight up heartbreaking, and that's a very easy choice for me to give that award. So moving on, how about this? Who's the best performance of the year? This is the performance where you just can't believe someone did this. You just can't believe this happened. You're just amazed by it. Josh, how about what is your best performance, hands down, of the year in motorsports?
I think it just kind of goes to the grit and desire to win, and in many ways, I think one of this is what makes this so much of a good talking point and healthy for NASCAR. That's Ross Chastain's defense of Ryan Blaney in the finale race. I mean, I think in the past, I think this is a turning point for that race because I think in the past, that guy, if you're running first and you're not in the championship four, and a guy's running second, knocking on your door. And just needs a little bit more to get around you, but can't find it. But you're defending them off. You would have let them go. You're like, you know what? I'm not gonna get in the way. Ross Chastain made Ryan Blaney earn it by keeping his cool as best he could. And Ryan Blaney's like, I'm here to win too. I got sponsors too. I got a team too. You know, I want to win the race just as bad as he wants to win the championship. And, you know, to me, I think we talked about it forever. NBC didn't know what to do because they're like, oh, we weren't prepared for this. So I think I made it even better. Kudos to Trackhouse and to, I think, NASCAR. No, I think Trackhouse basically was the only people to capture anything down there. But, you know, they pumped it up for the next couple of weeks. Like, hey, by the way, don't forget about us.
Was that a pun to Pitbull?
No, it wasn't.
I thought it was a good one.
Happy coincidence. But yeah, best performance, I think, goes to that. Just his defense of Ryan Blaney against Ryan Blaney in the finale race to win that race. And you know, say what you want, but Ryan Blaney still kept the car straight at the end of the day.
Well, for me, Josh, I can't disagree with that, but I'm kind of disappointed to kind of keep it in the NASCAR vibe, but of all the performances that I watched, I mean, now, best performance of the year, yeah, okay, well, you got, like, how many,
so many
Max Verstappen performances could you pick if you really wanted to and get real tactical about it? But in all honesty, the one that really stood out to me all year was Michael McDowell's complete domination of the Verizon 200 at the Brickyard. I mean, that was just, really, think about it, it's just truly insane. Mm-hmm. I mean, number one, I don't think everybody always knew that Michael McDowell was good at road courses. Like, he won at Road America in the Xfinity Series before. He came from a champ car background. He came from a road racing background. So everybody always kind of knew he was good. But the problem was, I think he's always been kind of held back by the quality of his team. And he's always, but that's kind of how McDowell's personality is. He's not trying to get to the bigger teams. He's content and happy with what he has, and he tries to make do with what he has and do the best with what he has, and he's loyal, and is he loyal to a fault? Maybe, but I think his loyalty paid off on that fateful day in August, because in all honesty, I was just, like I said, I was just completely blown away, not just with the pace that he had, but with the strategy overall by his team, by him, I mean, in general. I mean, like I said, this was a hard-earned win, because again, no stage breaks. This was when NASCAR was still making right good decisions, at least for 2023, and not having stage breaks. So this was a hard-fought win. Like, he had to fight over the course of all however many laps, 85 laps, that he had to do. And to do that in a car that, quite honestly, nobody really pegged for being a front-runner. Because let's be honest, I think a lot of people did not have Michael McDowell in their head. You know, if they're placing a bet or if they're thinking about who's going to win, you know, McDowell, especially for this race, was not the guy you picked. You know, you're looking at someone like SVG. You're looking at maybe a Kyle Larson. You're maybe even looking at Kyle Busch. Or maybe look at Christopher Bell. I think he had a pole, I think. You know, someone like that. Even Tyler Reddick, he was the defending champion of the race, so you're thinking about him. And it's just like, or Allmendinger, too. Of course, you can't count out Allmendinger. So there's all these other guys that people are probably going to pick before McDowell, and he goes out there, blows all of them out of the water. Literally all of them. Nobody goes and sees McDowell dominating this. And that, to me, is what makes for the best performance of the year. It's just the fact that he shocked everybody and won this race in commanding fashion, where he was the hands down car to beat all day, and everybody pointed out, this guy's a car to beat, this guy's a car to beat. I mean, that's, to me, that kind of thing was what made NASCAR fun back in the day, was you would see a team like that or a driver like that just absolutely kill it. Like Robbie Gordon, remember when Robbie Gordon came out in 2003 and swept the road courses?
All two of them.
Still, yeah. What other races did he win prior? Like,
he won New Hampshire in 2001 and a dual race in 2002.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So when he goes out there and just randomly wins those two races, that was impressive to everybody. That race, those two races, even though Robbie Gordon was already famous, he was already popular, I think those two races put him on the map. In the same regard as I think that performance in August at the Brickyard is going to put FRM and Michael McDowell forever on the map. No more people are going to say, oh, Michael McDowell, yeah, he's a Daytona 500 champion. Yeah, but he won it in a kind of a fluke. You know, the seas quite literally parted in front of him. I mean, yeah. They did. That's what I always said. The seas quite literally parted in front of him because Keselowski and Logano like went in different directions, like the seas parting. Like, yeah. And that's not a knock on McDowell. I'm just saying that quite literally the seas part for him. But so, you know, now he goes back and say, okay, yeah, you can discount my Daytona 500 win all you want, but no one is going to question the fact that he's a winner in Indianapolis and he dominated the race in the process. I mean, if you dominate a race at Indianapolis, don't care what the configuration you're on, that is something to behold. So that, I know that was a long-winded kind of explanation, but in all honesty, I'm still blown away by it, and I'll always be blown away by it. All right, biggest disappointment of the year, the most disappointing moment of the 2023 racing season. Josh, what moment in the 2023 racing season disappointed you the most?
You know, I'm going to preface this by saying, I know this is probably maybe not everyone's biggest disappointment or maybe not the most obvious one. And then I'm going to say, like, we should always celebrate dominance as well. It should be just as appreciated. But I'm still disappointed that Red Bull won 22 of the 23 Formula One races, or 21 and 22 races. I mean, it definitely got mundane.
Yeah.
It got boring. A couple times I just wasn't able to watch some of the last races this season because of my work schedule. But other races, I'm like, do I really want to watch this today? The script's already written and produced and released. So, do I care?
That's why you bet on who gets second.
Yeah. So,
if you really want to have fun, you place a bet on second place.
Exactly. I mean, that would, to me, is disappointing. I would have liked to have seen. I wanted to have a couple more magical moments. The past couple of years, we've had these magical moments where this one team or two teams have won. We've had a couple. We've had four constructors win the past 2 years. And a lot of it was, oh well, Red Bull and Mercedes are trading back and forth. You know, we had a couple of years there where Alpine won,
which was race.
Very random.
Pierre Gasly randomly won for AlphaTauri at Monza.
Yeah, and McLaren won with Daniel Ricciardo, you know, right?
Oh, yeah, forgot that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so there's a couple times there's been victories, and we didn't get that this year. I mean, Carlos Sainz winning, yeah, congratulations. You were the only guy in team not to win or to beat Red Bull on any given day. And, yeah, that to me was disappointing. When we go back, you know, we just had a couple times ago. Or I guess the next question is most memorable moment of the year. That's the next question. There's not one thing that was memorable from the 2023 F1 season.
Not really. I can't think of anyone.
Yeah, there's nothing that sticks out to me. Like, oh my gosh, I'll never forget that. You know, good or
I
bad.
I guess the practice debacle at Vegas.
I forgot about that already.
You forgot about it already. I didn't.
I forgot about it already, Rob. I mean, seriously. So that to me, they're just nothing good came with the 23 F1 season. So Rebel winning all but one race, biggest disappointment in my book. That's probably maybe a very broad statement and controversial pick, I'm sure, if you do a straw poll. But that's how I feel.
I think a lot of people would agree with you. My biggest disappointing moment of the year is the PPG 75 at Texas ending under caution. Now, I'm not saying IndyCar, again, I've always said IndyCar should under no circumstances ever go to a green-white checkered. I think it would be the most dangerous and reckless and stupid thing the series could ever do in the history of time. But it doesn't mean that I can't be kind of upset that the greatest Texas race in the last 5 years, unfortunately, did not get to conclude the way it should have. Like, we should have been able to have a photo finish like we did last year, in 2022. We should have been able to have, you know, some of those more thrilling runs to the finish. But Grosjean decided to just get up and out of the groove and wreck, so because that's what Grosjean does best. I didn't say that. But yeah, that was hands down the most disappointing moment to me. And then to make matters worse, like, we don't even get to see Texas again next year. So, like, that's just even worse. You know, not only did we not get to see a good finish, now we just don't get to see it at all. And Lord knows if we see it for 2025. And that's topic for another discussion, but it's all still very disappointing. So final Robin Roller Award giveaway here. The most memorable moment of the year, Josh, what is the most memorable moment of the 2023 racing season for you?
It wasn't butterflies. It wasn't shivers. I don't really know what to describe it as. I just had a feeling, a really good feeling, when watching Shane Van Gisbergen win the Streets of Chicago in the NASCAR race. I mean, that was an amazing moment. Watching that, like, you're like, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. Oh, crap. Is he going to do it? No, he's not going to do it. He's going to do it. That was, to me, I'm like, they should just had a camera on Shane the entire time. Like, where is he at? Yeah, the SVG cam or something, you know? That, to me, is the most memorable moment of the 2023 racing season. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to... We'd love to have something like that happen again with a driver that is making, you know, a surprise start, you know, whether it be with a Project 91 car or... what's the... Stage 60 with RFK.
Yeah,
there's someone making a surprise start or just a one-off start, part-time start, whatever it is. We get a moment like that, and I think that'd be great. And it was just fun watching that.
Well, that one was an easy pick. I mean, I completely agree with everything you said regarding having butterflies. I mean, I thought to myself at the beginning of that race. I think I said this after the fact on the podcast, but I said to myself, I was like, SVG is going to win this race. And secretly in the back of my head, I was like, yeah, but how often are my predictions correct? You know, like even I knew. I was like, that's what I want to happen. I'm aware that that's what I want to happen. Yeah. And then when it started to become more and more likely that it was going to be a reality, honestly, that's like you said. I mean, I have not gotten like goosebumps in my stomach like that during a NASCAR race since the last time I saw Casey Kane win a race at the Brickyard. Like that was the last time I truly felt that. And I wasn't even supposed to feel that at the time, because again, I was supposed to be an impartial journalist, but it's one of those reasons where it's like, I'm kind of low-key glad a lot of the drivers I cheered for as a kid have kind of retired, because it makes covering the sport objectively easier, but I still miss them. Like, I still love Casey Kane, and I still remember every time he was in contention for a win, even at 2004, 2005, 2006, didn't matter the year. Like, I would get those goosebumps. I get goosebumps, I get butterflies in my stomach, all that stuff. That's how I felt with SVG winning at Chicago. So I totally agree with you on that. Before I get too sidetracked, I'm going to give my most memorable moment of the year and give it to the fact of the matter is Brody Kostecki won the Supercars Championship. And that to me is incredible. And I am not going to forget how he turned it up this season, completely destroyed SVG, like in every facet of the imagination. And I did not have that on my bingo card for 2023. I did not have Brody Kostecki winning his first race on a bingo card. I mean, I assumed it was coming. I figured it was coming at some point, but I didn't think it was going to come as soon as it did, you know? And yes, I was disappointed that it was won the way it was at Adelaide, you know, that complete farce of a race weekend, right? But he ended up winning more legitimate races throughout the rest of the season, and then ended up to go on to win the championship in... I mean, it came down to the wire, but it was still a hard-fought, you know, title that, you know, he was not going to give up without a fight. And now he's coming over to NASCAR. You know, we're going to have the two most recent Supercars champions racing in NASCAR. And, or at least not, Brody's not going to be full-time, but he's going to do a handful of one-offs. And there's going to be periods of time where they're going to be on the same track together, him and SVG. Mm-hmm. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
And like I said, to me, that's just so memorable. It's not just Brody coming over here and doing NASCAR, but then winning the championship, beating SVG, and kind of turning this guard over. It's like, okay, now there's a new era in supercars now, or the post-SVG era, but we've also got these Australian drivers coming over to the States and running in NASCAR. And they're not just like, you know... bums off the street like Jack Smith. You know, they're actual champions. You know, they're, and I apologize to Jack Smith. I like Jack Smith. I don't care, but everybody else knows what I mean. It's impressive. It's impressive, Josh, and I'm happy for it, and it's a very memorable moment. All right, Josh, let's move on. That is the last Robin Roller Award. We are going to try and wrap this show up as quickly as we can. Hopefully within the next 10 minutes. I don't know. We're going to see.
That's not happening. That's not happening.
Well, if we go through this next thing pretty quickly, I think it could. I think we'll see. So this is going to be a let's make a California sketch. I just saw that it was Southern California. Good gravy. I have just ruined everything.
Okay.
So I'm going to change it to let's make a California schedule. Because I couldn't find, Josh, I told you it took me too long, and maybe that's why. I couldn't find enough Southern California tracks that I knew about. So I'm changing it to let's make a California schedule. Josh has made a Southern California schedule. I have gone completely off the rails and ignored the rules and just gone all over California. Active and gone tracks can be, you know, anywhere. So, Josh, what is your list of Southern California races? And keep in mind, I screwed up, so mine will be of some Northern and Mid California.
All good. I made 15 tracks here, and mine are Ascot Park Speedway, which in this configuration is the half mile dirt oval, Culver City Speedway, which was a mile and a quarter board track.
Culver's.
Yeah, that's true. I got a gift card for Christmas. I definitely need to use there.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Yeah. Del Mar Street Course. That was a 1.6 mile street course in the San Diego area. Of course, Fontana Speedway, California Speedway, Auto Club Speedway, whatever you want to call it. Rest in peace. The 2 mile oval, obviously. I mean, who would choose the road course there, right? Irwindale Speedway, the half mile oval. Legion Ascot Speedway, 5/8 mile dirt oval. The Los Angeles Speedway / Beverly Hills Speedway. It went by both names. I prefer Beverly Hills Speedway myself. There's a couple other Los Angeles Speedway names out there, so Beverly Hills makes it a little bit more unique. That was a mile and a quarter board track as well. Ontario Motor Speedway, the Indianapolis copy with a wider track, 2.5 mile oval there. Orange County International Raceway. I've mentioned this track on the show before. It's a 2 mile road course. No longer exists. I believe there is a little segment that exists, like pavement wise, but other than that, it's gone. Interstate took over that land. Orange Show Speedway, 1/4 mile oval. Paramount Ranch, another road course I've spoken about on the show. 2 mile road course there had a bridge too, like had the racetrack went under the racetrack, much like Suzuka. Point Loma Road Race Course, so the street course, you know, essentially back in the day, 5.9 mile street course, right? Gotta love that. Riverside International Raceway, duh, and I'll go with the 3.3 mile road course configuration. 14th track here, Santa Monica Road Race Course. Again, it's a street course back in the day, 20s, teens of the 20th century. 8.4 miles. I mean, how do you not include that? Like, all right, boys, girls, here we go. We're going to do 10 laps. All right, 84-mile race. Don't miss a corner, right? And finally, Saugus Speedway, a 1/3 mile oval, paved oval. Yeah, this was tough because I made a list of about 35 tracks. And I'm like, gravy. Which ones do I want? And so this was the 15 that made the cut. And I hope y'all enjoy that one. If you're listening to Southern California, I got a little San Diego in there as well. In Point Loma and Del Mar. So hopefully you all enjoy that. The rest of them are basically in the Inland Empire LA area.
Well, Josh, since I screwed up and just have a bunch of California Speedway racetracks all over the track, I'll go ahead and give mine because this is in order of how I would make the schedule anyway. Start the season at Riverside, then go to Ontario. That's basic, simple. Go up north to Sonoma, come back down to Irwindale, go on the first short track. then have some fun over Willow Springs, because you gotta
have it.
And then why not? Why the heck not go to back to a short trek? Go to the LA Coliseum, I say. Go there. I just think I have a weird thing for races and stadiums now ever since this LA Coliseum race. Like, I don't want it to be like a thing NASCAR does all the time, but like if they make the Clash like their version of like, say, the Winter Classic in NHL, where they stadium go to series. A different like a stadium series or something like that, I would have zero problems with that. Like I know the fact of the matter is, though, that the Coliseum is probably one of the only stadiums that could ever do that or would be willing, but I would still love it. Like,
I believe two of the other stadiums that could do it, I could be wrong on one of them, but are actually two stadiums that are represented by teams in the college national championship game for football in Washington and Michigan.
Are you talking like the Michigan football, like Husky Stadium in Washington?
Yes.
Really?
I believe when you look at the size, when you look at the size of the bowl, you gotta look at the size of the bowl.
Yeah.
Can track me roughly there? Like, that's why most NFL stadiums cannot do it, because their bowl is so small.
Dude, I think it's time that we did that then. You know, that's how we get NASCAR into the Pacific Northwest. We get them
Clash
to Seattle.
In the middle
we
of
get
summer.
Them to the...
Like I said, bookmark the summer with the All-Star Race and the Clash. I suggested that a while back.
Go even more fun, because since it's in Seattle and it's on it'll be on a short track, you can race in the rain. Let's have fun.
Oh, that's true. You could do that. That'd be really cool.
Let's be honest. It would rain if you had it at a Husky Stadium in Seattle. It would definitely rain, right? It would totally be raining. It's NASCAR. You just know that would happen, right? Yeah. But because it's a short track, they have that package. They could do it, and I would 110% love that. It would make me so happy to watch that. Anyway, after we go into the LA Coliseum, we're going to Mesa Marin, because that still exists in our little fantasy. And then we're also going to Orange County, because gotta go there. I mean, you can't not. Gotta have more dirt tracks on this schedule. Gotta have road courses, super speedways, short tracks, dirt tracks. Gotta have the whole thing. And then even a street course, because we're going to go to the streets of San Jose. That's right, the Redback street circuit, or the Redback Raceway. That's what they called it. Redback Raceway in San Jose. Because why? Because I think that stupid turn one hairpin is the dumbest and most awesome turn in the history of motorsports. I thought when the Baltimore Grand Prix tried to replicate it, it was the coolest thing ever, but it wasn't the same. It'll never be the stupid drag strip right hand turn. Like, not, it's just like 90 degrees. It's not even 90 degrees. It's like, it's more than 90 degrees. It's insane how tight of a turn it is. And I still think it's great. And then, of course, you got to go to Kern County, because you can't have any kind of Southern California schedule without going to Kern County. And in the same regard, you can't say, oh, you go to San Jose, but you got to also go to Long Beach. You can't not go to Long Beach. I mean, come on. If you're already going to go to San Jose, you might as well go to Long Beach, too. Why not? And in my fantasy world, we're going to Long Beach in September, too, because why the hell not? Just
it worked before.
Yeah. And then we're going to go to Laguna Seca, because you have to. Got to go on the corkscrew. And then Saugus Speedway, as you mentioned in yours. And then one that I found that was really cool that you didn't include in yours, but I thought
this
was really,
cool
really cool. Is Oakland Speedway, which was a one-mile banked dirt oval that existed during the post-war depression years between 1931 and 1941. It was basically a giant banked mile dirt oval.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in Oakland, California. And it hosted AAA Champ Car races for a handful of years.
Do you believe NASCAR went there in the 50s?
That'd be impossible, because it didn't exist after 1941.
Oh, I thought that. Well, did they pave it after 41 or after the war?
No, I don't know. I don't think so.
I think the one they went to in Oakland was paved. I think it was this track. I could be wrong, but I think it was this track. They just paved it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the article I was reading on that didn't say that, but it is what it is. But it's okay. I'm not going to call you a liar. You know more about racetracks than I do sometimes. And then, of course, as every proper finale should be held in California anyway, the proper finale should be always held in Fontana. Unfortunately, NASCAR has decided that that can't be the case anymore, unfortunately, and I'm very sad about that. Now let's move on. One thing you would change in the world of racing, Josh, let's get through this as quickly as possible. Just boom, quick little thoughts on this, quick thoughts. One thing you would change in Formula One, IndyCar, and NASCAR. Josh, go.
Formula One, Australia is either the season opener or closer. There's no reason why this should not be a book into the season. Agreed. IndyCar, I'm adding 5 total races, and they're all ovals to the schedule. I'm not taking any away. I'm just adding 5 races, and they're all ovals. Snap of a finger, it's done. In NASCAR, I'm adding 4 charters and the necessary funds to support it to the Cup Series, and I'm increasing the field limit to 43 cars. I have full confidence that whatever the going rate is right now for charters, you could sell 4 of them, have a good bidding war, and you could still have 44, 5, 6, 7, 8 cars show up to the Daytona 500 if you got 3 open spots. 100%, I believe that. Rob, what's the things you changed for Formula One, IndyCar, and NASCAR?
Well, I'm going to keep it about as basic as possible. In Formula One, one of the first things I'm going to change is I'm going to keep sprint races, but I'm going to make the starting grids just be the inverted qualifying results. And I'm serious. I'm saying inverted, which means you qualify dead last. You start first in the sprint. I want to see Max Verstappen come from 20th to first in the sprint. That's what I want to see. That's how you make the sprints fun. That's how you see this make the sprints worth fun. If the FIA pushes back on that, then you just say, okay, fine, we'll just invert the top 10 then. Yeah. You make Max Verstappen start not first is basically the point. In IndyCar, oh, this is easy. Texas just goes back. Screw logistics. I don't care. Logistics don't matter. I am just making an executive decision, and I am saying, y'all figure it out. We're going back to Texas. Y'all figure out how it's done. I don't care. It's just going to happen. We're going to go to Texas. We're going to show up. I don't care if nobody is in the grandstands. I don't care if Texas Motor Speedway doesn't even expect us. I don't give two craps. We are just going to roll in, and we are going to hold a race weekend there, and it is going to be a great event that everybody's going to say is a classic. That's it. And then in NASCAR, this is also equally just as simple. The easiest thing on the planet that we're going to do is we're just going to put more horsepower. We're going to make everything the same. I'm not going to change anything. I'm not going to mess with the next-gen aerodynamics. I'm not going to mess with anything else. I'm not going to mess with the playoffs. I'm not going to mess with the schedule. I'm not going to mess with anything else. I am only going to make 950 horsepower machines go flying around Daytona, go flying around Indianapolis, go flying around Michigan, and go flying around Dover. That's what I want to see. That's what I want out of NASCAR Confonit. Now then, as we wrap up the show, this is the last segment of our show. This is going to be fun. And I'm actually excited this, Josh, because even though we are running low on time, I think making this go quick is going to be a little bit more fun. I want to do our way too early predictions, Josh, but I want to do it the first thing that comes to your head. I don't need to hear logic for it. I don't need to hear an explanation. And I'm sure I'm going to want to give one, and this is not, I'm going to try and keep myself from doing that. But I just want to hear first thing that comes into your head, first answer when we ask these questions, what your answer is, Josh. So first, the way too early for predictions for Formula One. How many constructors win in Formula One in 2024?
3.
3? I'm going to say 4. How many drivers win in 2024?
4.
I'm going to say 3. That's impossible because I just said 4 are going to win. So I'm going to say 5. Maybe I should think about these. Anyway, Lewis Hamilton breaks his 2-year winless streak. This is easy. This is a little bit more easy to do off the cuff. Does he break it? I agree. I think he's going to break it. Sergio Perez, does he win next year?
Yes.
I agree. I think he's also going to win next year. I think he's going to at least one race. He's going to win at least one race. Drivers' Championship. Who's going to win? Who's Verstappen. The title? Verstappen? I'm going to agree. I think it's hard to say Verstappen, especially we said way too early. I think it's acceptable for both of us to say.
I don't think it's way too early to predict him the 2025 world champion.
Oh, don't give him that already. Hopefully some sort of change will happen to the cars. Formula change will happen. Now into IndyCar, way too early. Way too early predictions. Roger Penske wins his 20th Indianapolis 500.
No.
I also say no. Will eight different drivers win in the IndyCar series in 2024?
Yes, at least eight.
I say no. I don't think eight. I think I don't think it's going to be that many. Scott Dixon wins his 7th IndyCar championship. Josh, yes or no?
No.
I say yes. A team other than Penske or Ganassi is going to win the championship. Josh?
No.
I also say no, given what I just said earlier. Who wins the 2024 IndyCar championship, Josh?
Scott McLaughlin.
Scotty Mac! Ho-ho-ho! I like that. I already said Scott Dixon's going to win, so that's easy. NASCAR. First question here. Ty Gibbs, does he win 3 Cup Series races? I said 3 Cup races in 2024.
I'm feeling more like 2, so no.
I believe Ty Gibbs is going to pop off next year. I think he's going to win 3 races. Is Chase Elliott going to make the championship 4 next year, Josh?
Making 3 in a row is hard. I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say he turns it around. I'm going to say he does. Corey LaJoie makes the 2024 NASCAR Cup Series playoffs. Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm feeling a Corey LaJoie playoff.
I think he's going to point his way in. Shane Van Gisbergen wins on an oval in the Xfinity Series. Josh, what's your take?
I think this is the toughest question we have. No, no.
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say he does. I really think he's got a chance at he's got a chance at an oval track that like races more like a road course. So I'm talking like the Martinsville, Pocono, maybe even to a lesser extent Indianapolis. You know, something like that, where some place where he's going to have to shift, you know, and things like that. So I would say yes. One driver wins 7 or more races in the NASCAR Cup Series.
I feel like this is, yeah, I feel like we've seen it happen more often than not recently. So yes, I'm saying yes.
I think it could be Christopher Bell. So I'm going to say yes. All 4 Stewart Haas drivers missed the 2024 NASCAR Cup Series playoffs. Oh, long thought process.
Not all four miss. I'm going to say no.
Okay. All right. I'm going to say all 4 miss. I don't. That lineup is just not strong. I'm sorry. That lineup strong, is just not strong.
It's not strong, but I have confidence that one of them will win a race here randomly.
I like Josh Berry, but I'm not going to give him too much credit just yet. I don't think Noah Gregson's going to do anything. I think Chase Briscoe and Ryan Preece are carrying that team, and both of them are going through slumps right now.
Yeah.
So it's not going to work out. Ultimate question here. What 2 drivers who made the 2023 NASCAR Cup Series playoffs will miss the 2024 NASCAR Cup Series playoffs?
Well, I had to remind myself who was in
here. Yeah, I'm going to have to do the same thing.
You know, obviously, Harvick is not coming back, so I'm not going to say
that. Yeah, that would be too easy.
That'd be too easy. Honestly, I hate to say this to you guys. One guy's expecting his first kid. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is not going to make the playoffs next year. And we just talked about him. Had a great performance at Indianapolis. But Michael McDowell, I don't think he makes it either, even though he could have pointed his way in this year. So that's possibly a bold statement.
Well, you know what? I am disagreeing with you on the Michael McDowell thing. While I do think Old Studhouse is not going to make it, I think the other guy who's probably more likely than not going to make it into the playoffs. And call me crazy for saying this, but I think it might not be hard to say perhaps Kyle Busch could miss the playoffs.
That's not a bad pick either.
That is my thought process there, that perhaps that could be a thing that happens next year. Now the final question, Josh, who's going to win the 2024 Cup Series title?
Yeah, this is, I think this is a tough one too. But, you know, he made the championship four this year. And I think he had, I think you could even say he was a breakout driver. William Byron, I think he is going to win the 2024 championship. I think he's learned a lot of lessons over the last 2 years. And he's going to put all that to good use. And he's going to win the championship next year.
I still say I think it's going to be Christopher Bell. I think Christopher Bell's got a title in his future. The way he finished 2023 was really, really strong. And I think he's got a really good shot at going into 2024 with chip on his shoulder and probably going to go make a deep, deep, deep playoff run that probably ends in a championship. So anyway, that was a lot of fun, Josh. I love doing that. This was a lot of fun today to do. I appreciate everybody for tuning in today to the Racing with Robin Rollers New Year's special. We hope you've had a wonderful and happy new year. We hope that your new year has been wonderful. We hope that you had a wonderful holiday season, regardless of what you celebrate. Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, doesn't care. Don't matter. Hope whatever it was that you celebrated was wonderful. Because believe me, there's tons of holidays that are celebrated in December. Like if you actually look up the amount of holidays that are celebrated in December, I mean, good Lord. And you could even count Festivus if you really, really wanted to. You can count Festivus if you want. You know, there's tons of holidays. So saying happy holidays is, I always feel like, fine, because you could be saying Happy Festivus and Merry Christmas at the same time by just saying Happy Holidays, if you're really being honest with yourself. But anyway, I digress on that. That's weird for me. There is one thing I want to mention before we end the show, and that is we just want to pay our respects real quick to, we lost Cale Yarborough over the week, and on the 31st of December, Cale was 84. And that was a hard loss for the NASCAR family. Hall of Famer, multi-time. I mean, he's in basically every Hall of Fame. I mean, he's in NASCAR Hall of Fame. He should have been in the inaugural class. Can't believe it took him until the third class to get in, which is still crazy to me. But he's in the International Motorsports Hall of Fame. He's in the Motorsports Hall of Fame. He's in, you know, all four sorts of Hall of Fames. And he, you know, Cale Yarborough, this is something that I feel bad not knowing, Josh, but, Cale Yarborough started four Indy 500s in his career, but something that I did not know was that in 1971, he only ran four NASCAR races while he contested the full 1971 USAC Championship car season. And he finished sixth. Huh?
I feel like I knew that and forgot about it, but that's a good fact.
It is. He had a handful of top tens. He had a handful of top tens. He failed to qualify for two races, which was funny. He qualified at Milwaukee and at the season finale at Phoenix, which was kind of wild to me, but it was, you know, he finished 16th in points and, he came back in 72, only ran the Indy 500 that year. Finished 10th, scored, that was his last Indy 500, was 72, where he finished 10th in the race. So Cale Yarborough had a top 10 finish in the Indy 500. And then after that, he proceeded to go on and win three more Daytona 500s, three consecutive NASCAR championships. Just absolutely an incredible driver. And then the thing about Cale Yarborough was, Cale was 84. So I think a lot of us were, while we were nervous about Cale, we weren't necessarily as shocked to hear of his passing as we were to hear of Gilles Defferrin, who died on December 29th. Gilles Defferrin, for those who do not know, I mean, it's hard not to know him, but for those who do not know, was the 2000 and 2001 CART FedEx Championship Series champion, as well as the 2003 Indianapolis 500 winner, finished second in the 2003 IndyCar Series, as well as the 2002 IRL. He finished third in that championship. Defferrin, in general, was just an outstanding driver, probably one of the nicest guys on and off the track. Everybody loved being around Gilles Defferrin. Gilles Defferrin, hands down, one of the best, arguably one of the best IndyCar drivers of all time. He unfortunately passed away on December 29th at the age of 56 from a reported, at least according to Tony Kanaan, him and his son were racing at a private racing club in Florida, and Gilles pulled the car over and saying he wasn't feeling well, and unfortunately he ended up passing away from a heart attack later that day. So very difficult way to end 2023, but definitely looking forward to the future ahead into 2024 that we're very thankful that we're able to see. But hey, you know, I don't mean to end the show on such a negative note, but I would be wrong if I didn't mention those two, the passing of two legends in motorsports world. So, but hey, everybody, don't forget to tune in. Listen, we're going to drop them here in February. Don't forget to listen to the Racing with Robin Roller podcast, sixth season premiere coming up here in February. When the Clash at Daytona starts, we'll have recaps from the Chili Bowl, from the Rolex 24 at Daytona that's going on. We'll even recap a couple of those other January races that are happening, but those are, you know, the two major ones. So, everybody, thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate you guys tuning in to our New Year special. We, again, like I said, hope you have a happy holiday. Had a happy holiday. Have a happy New Year. Hope you keep to some of those New Year's resolutions if you are keeping them at all. For Josh Roller, my name is Rob Peters, and this has been the Racing with Robin Roller podcast's New Year's special. Have a great month, everybody.